And we're back. This is Karen Testerman with Smart Girl Politics. Our co-host, Susan Olson, is AWOL, I'd like to say, but not really. We just want her to know that we miss her. And in studio, we have Nancy Elliott, one of our smart girls who is an expert on euthanasia. And on the line today, we have a very special guest, Greg Marad. Greg is the vice president of the National Right to Work Committee. And welcome to Smart Girl Politics, Greg.
Thanks, Karen. Glad to be with you.
I'm glad to have you with us. I'm sorry that Right to Work didn't pass in New Hampshire. It's sort of a bittersweet because if it had passed in New Hampshire and we'd been able to override the governor's veto, then we wouldn't be talking to you. So now we are talking to you. Tell us how are you progressing around the country as far as getting Right to Work legislation accomplished?
Well, passing it in Michigan last month was definitely a shot in the arm for a whole lot of places that might not have thought Right to Work was possible before and are now saying, well, if Michigan could do it, certainly we could do it here too. And we've seen a real surge in enthusiasm on this issue across the Midwest and a few other places that don't have Right to Work laws now. Unfortunately, things didn't go so well last November in New Hampshire, and we're probably not in a position to pass it there this cycle. But we haven't given up on the Granite State, and we'll be back again as things move forward.
Well, I hope so. And, there's been a lot of myth surrounding Right to Work and what it does. And so can you give us a good synopsis on just exactly what the legislation would accomplish?
Sure. It's really a very simple concept. It simply says nobody can be forced as a condition of employment to join a union or pay any dues or fees to a union. And it's as simple as that. It means people can choose for themselves whether or not they think the union in their workplace deserves their support.
So if you were a state worker, you wouldn't have to sign that little thing, that little piece of paper that says, I will join the union?
Exactly.
As a condition of my employment?
Exactly. And technically, they're not becoming members, but they are agreeing to pay a significant portion, sometimes as much as full dues, for this so-called representation that the union supposedly provides to them. Representation that they don't want, many of them, did not ask for, would give up if they could, and often works against their interests.
How come it isn't an opt-in option? You know, that I would think that that would be a more fair approach to unions in the first place.
Absolutely. It ought to be up to the individual's choice whether or not they want to be part of a union. I mean, freedom of association, as with all the freedoms, implies the freedom not to associate. We don't have that in this country, at least not in New Hampshire, and not in the non-right-to-work states, because the unions, through a raw exercise of political power, have grabbed the ability to force people to pay them, whether people think they're being served well or not.
You know, the thing is, this is Nancy Elliott, by the way. The thing is, this actually hurts people in their jobs, because the union can sometimes make it so expensive that they just don't have that position anymore. They just, you know, scale down. I know a lot of companies that were union, and they've just scaled back to a skeleton force because of the squeezing.
That can certainly happen. I mean, I'm not here to say that all unions are universally bad or that they're always bad actors or even that they're always bad for their companies. But it ought to be up to the individual to choose to decide whether or not he's being well served by the union in his workplace.
Well, what are some of the benefits that unions actually have served the people over history?
Well, when you see an employer who is a bad actor, who is not treating his people well or fairly, it is very valuable for those people to be able to gather together and say, we're going to negotiate in concert. We are going to deal with the employer as a united group instead of letting him pick us off one by one. And certainly the ability of people to bargain collectively has been a benefit in many cases. The problem isn't collective bargaining. The problem is when it becomes monopoly bargaining, when the union says, we're going to bargain on behalf of everybody here, whether they like it or not.
Right, right. I agree that is an interest. You know, I can see where there have been situations where we've had some, as you say, bad players in the employer a role in the leading role. But also what seems to have happened is that those bad players have now sprouted up within the collective bargaining agents. And so we now have those people who are power hungry and seem to want to lord it over other people that we are going to show you how to get it.
Sure, and they've been there really at least as far back as 1935 when they gained the monopoly power to begin with.
Uh-huh.
There have been bad actors on both sides for a very long time.
Yeah.
You know, I meet with people across this country on a regular basis, business owners and union members and union non-members alike, and you know, all of them pretty much agree a business gets the union it deserves. And businessmen understand this. If you treat your people well, you treat them fairly, and you pay them a decent wage for the place where they live, they don't put a union in between you and them. And when you treat your people poorly, you're likely to end up with a confrontational union that you're going to be unhappy with.
Right. So now, you say that you don't think it's going to go anywhere in New Hampshire, at least under this current administration. What could we be doing, and what can the people who are listening to this program be doing to reinforce the forces that would like to get this accomplished at some time in the future? Is there anything? Are we sort of just sort of waiting in the and hoping not to drown here in New Hampshire? Are we gonna? Is there any hope out there?
Well, the hope for change is often at the ballot box, though we believe very much in aggressively lobbying all the existing politicians. And I am confident that the path to victory is a program that convinces every politician in the state that right to work is a popular issue, that the people want it. And when you get that, you end up with politicians either changing their minds or getting replaced.
So is it really a partisan type of legislation, or are there people on both sides of the aisle that support right to work?
Well, it's getting hard to find many Democrats that support right to work. The Democrat Party is pretty tightly tied in with the big labor movement. Unions give the Democrat Party a great deal of money and provide a great deal of the foot soldier support for Democrat campaigns. And so a Democrat with the courage to support right to work usually finds himself on the receiving end of big labor's gunfire during the primary phase. And it's not to say there are none, but there aren't very many. On the Republican side, you tend to find more support for right to work. Even there, you find some Republicans who are just deathly afraid of big labor and would rather see this issue not come up. And they are often we have to do some work to convince them that this is an issue that helps them politically, not hurts them politically.
So where are you going next after Michigan? Because you don't have the whole of the United States yet.
No, we're almost to the halfway point. We're at 24 now with Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
The next states that we're looking at, Kentucky is real high on the list. Montana is really high on the list, though the governor there would probably veto it. We're going to come at him anyway. Missouri is high on the list. Would like to see it happen in Wisconsin. The governor there has said he's not really interested in it for the remainder of this term, but that doesn't mean that he wouldn't sign it if we got it to him. It's on the table in Pennsylvania. I think it's being introduced in the next couple of days there. Colorado is always a possibility. There's a lot of places where we're looking at 2 to 4 year programs rather than this year. Most likely we will not pass any new right-to-work laws this year, but 2012 was really an aberration. We passed two in 2012. The last time we'd achieved that was all the way back to 1952. And the previous one before 2012 was Oklahoma in 2001. So right-to-work laws are usually a long, hard fight, and we expect that we're in the middle phases of that long, hard fight in two or three places, and at the beginning of that long, hard fight in five or six more.
Okay, so now when did this right to work move start?
Well, 1947, Congress passed the Taft-Hartley Act, which gave states the freedom to pass right-to-work laws. When they passed the Wagner Act in 1935, they created this structure of monopoly bargaining and letting unions force people to pay. In 47, they realized they'd gone too far, and they rolled it back a little bit with Section 14B of Taft-Hartley. That's when we started seeing right-to-work laws pass.
Okay.
The bulk of them were passed in the late 40s and 50s.
So if our listeners want to know any more about right to work or what it means or what you're doing or how they can get involved, where do they go?
www.nrtwc, that's National Right to Work Committee.org.
Okay. And you also have a foundation. What does that do?
We do. The Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation, its mission is to provide free legal aid to people who have been badly served or abused by their unions. People who want to opt out of paying for union politics, people in right to work states who are nevertheless fired for refusal to pay union dues, things like that. Sometimes unions and employers will collude together and cut a sweetheart deal to force everybody to pay union dues and lower their wages. In such cases, we'll sue both the union and the employer.
Okay. Have you had some recent victories there?
The Right to Work Foundation has had a number of recent victories, a couple of them at the Supreme Court level, a bunch of them before the board. I work for the committee and do most of our lobbying efforts, so I'm not as up to speed on the legal program, right. but they have a number of victories, and at any given time, they have several hundred cases on their docket. So if any of your listeners feel like they're being abused by their unions in an illegal way, they should contact the Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation. We'd be happy to see if we could help them.
Fantastic. And so the committee actually works to lobby and get the legislation passed.
Yes.
Okay.
And block union big labor power grabs in various state legislatures around the country as well.
Right. Is there anything in particular that our listeners could do to help you out?
Contact your legislators. Let them know that right to work would be good for New Hampshire. It would bring freedom to individuals, and it'd help bring jobs to the state, and it's something you'd like to see them do.
So those letters to the legislators and letters to the editor are really important.
They really do make a difference, absolutely. Those politicians, they count. One letter is one vote, and you better believe their highest priority is almost always getting reelected. And angry voters is a problem for that. So let them know that you'd like right to work, and that definitely helps the long-term fight.
And even though we don't have a good prospect in this current election cycle, we should still go ahead and try to influence as many people, as many of those voters and legislators as possible, because we'll be laying the groundwork for next time, right?
Exactly right.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Greg, for coming on and talking with us and letting us know how things are going and giving us a little hope down the road.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. This is Smart Girl Politics. We've been talking with Greg Murad of the National Right to Work Committee. And even though we were not successful in overriding the governor's veto the last time, at least we made some real progress, because it's been a while since they've been even able to get it through both houses.
Yeah, I think they got more votes than they've had in ages. Yeah. Towards that. So it was pretty close. It was pretty close.
It was very close.
But there's a lot of intimidation. If you vote in favor of right to work, they will target you.
And target you. Now, Nancy has been a state representative. So tell us, how did they target the state reps?
Well, they've targeted me in the past. And what they do is they get all their members in your district, and they tell them to vote against you. They also send them postcards and tell them to vote against you. They have the members. They give the members a stack of postcards. You can tell they're all these orange cards, and they say, send this to all of your representatives, and it says, do not vote for right to work. You know, I'm in your district. Do not vote for it. And I would get 30, 40 of those, you know, of people in my town. So they really do. And I had one
lady that's a friend of mine who told me her husband's in the union, and he was sent a thing, do not vote for me, because I had voted for right to work when I was in the House, and it said, do not vote for me. Fortunately, I made my election, but it was close.
Well, I know both sides of the aisle use the postcards, and it's I know that the legislators will always tell you the personal note makes a lot more difference, but they are, it is an intimidation factor when you do get a stack of those cards, whatever color they are, and you know that they're what they are.
When you get 30, 40 cards, you have to pay attention.
Yes. Well, in fact, if you get a handwritten note, how many do you get when you know, when it's a signal that something is really boiling up here? How many would you say that is?
I would say 10 is a hot issue. If you've got 10, it's a hot issue, especially if, like you say, they're the handwritten ones. But then also, if you've got form things and there's a large number and they're in your district, that's the big thing, your district. If you get them all over the state, that's interesting. But it's the ones that are in your district.
Right. And so if you wanted to know who your legislators are, just as another aside, you can go to nh.gov. And on the right-hand side, there are a list of the different branches of the state government. And you just go to the legislative branch. That will take you to the legislative page, which will have on it the House and the Senate rosters. So be involved. Get informed. If you've got a passion for something, don't hesitate to let your legislators know how you feel about it, and also don't forget to write that letter to the editor, because those are read. Most of the people that I know who are legislators tell me that they read those every morning, and they do have an impact. So.
That's true. They can also, if they have a bill of interest that's in a particular committee, and they may not have a legislator from their district there, they can write to the committee and express that, you know, I would like to see right to work pass, or, you know, whatever their issue is.
Uh-huh. Well, that's very helpful, too, because a lot of times you think that it's only your legislator that you can influence. But that's a very, very good point, that the committee does make a difference. Well, this is Smart Girl Politics with Karen Testerman and Nancy Elliott. I was going to call you Nancy Olson. Now, where was that coming from? A little combination of Susan Olson and Nancy Elliott. But we're very happy to have Nancy in the studio with us today. And we will be back after this very short break.